So now I think we're, in theory, we're live.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have a co-author, Jan Flowers, in the audience here, and my other co-author recently had a son, so she's not she wasn't able to come to Finn this year. But what I want to talk about is this work that we've done on connecting lab EMR through an interoperability profile as a prototype, as an approach to developing a facility level architecture. So a couple of quick premises. I wanted to start with the premise that interoperability is good, and that I actually hope that it's this good. It's as good as apple pie. I want to sort of, this is the subliminal part, where I want to leave you with kind of a vague feeling that this was like a really delicious talk, and that that you could easily kind of eat another piece. And I think, you know, I used to start with an argument about why interoperability was good, and I think now, 5 years later, we can skip that part of it. Standards are not sufficient is sort of the second premise. And that one I want to spend just a few minutes on, because I think that still is not a foregone conclusion, that standards are not sufficient. This brief example, not really intended to be that readable from the seats, but I found this on a PAX forum, and I think many of us have experienced this kind of incompatibility of standards. This is a long discussion about, I'm getting these errors, any ideas? Well, it's because the HL7 interface for this server is based on 2.3.1, so make sure your sending application is compatible with that. Well, I've confirmed that it's compatible with using 2.3. I'm still seeing all these errors. Now 2.3 is not the same as 2.3.1, and it just goes on like that, right? So this is something many of us have dealt with, is all of the incompatibilities that standards alone aren't sufficient to ensure information exchange. The third premise that I want to bring up is that eHealth architecture is good. And this one's got a lot of traction these days, too. It's one of these things that, you know, informaticists really like block diagrams. This is what we live for, is drawing rich, complex block diagrams. And I want to talk a little bit more about eHealth architecture and what comprises a good eHealth architecture, but I think it's something, you know, it's important to have a well-defined, systematic, scalable structure to standards-based interoperability. And that's what this is going to wind up being about. So as a corollary to eHealth architectures being good, I want to say that block diagrams are good. The talk isn't just about EMR-LIS interface. It's about how to use the shape of that interface as a design pattern. It's about how to use the shape of that interface to develop an extensible facility-level architecture. So what we want to look for is repeatable shapes in that block diagram. And I hope that I'll leave you with the sense that EMR lab information system is very much one of those repeatable shapes. What are design patterns? Whenever I need a definition, I go to the trusted source, Wikipedia. And in software engineering, a design pattern is a general reusable solution to a commonly occurring problem within a given context. In particular, structural design patterns address concerns related to high-level structures of applications being developed. And I'm going to say, really what we're talking about are architectural design patterns. To implement an eHealth architecture, you have to develop scalable, repeatable interoperability. You have to describe all of the components of your architecture, an electronic medical record, a lab information system, a patient index, an auditing system, the security system. You have to describe all of those components. They all have to be well described in terms of functional requirements. You have to describe the business processes that require data interactions, and typically that's done in terms of use cases. And then the standards that are used to support those data interactions and the specific ways in which you apply those standards, the specific business rules and the specific coding sets you use as part of an HL7 message, the specific times at which you elect to send an HL7 message, what you do with HL7 messages that you receive that aren't quite right. Those should be integrated with the use cases and described as an interoperability profile. And those profiles, looking at the commonality between those profiles, is what helps get at the design patterns. There we go. I wanted to reference a paper that Hammond and Bailey and others at WHO put in Health Affairs last year, and that paper discussed five different types of interoperability. At the facility level, we're really going to focus on three types around this interface work. On the first three, on interoperability in terms of a unique patient identifier, interoperability of meaning, semantic interoperability, and interoperability of format or syntax. About a year ago, I needed a definition of an interoperability profile. So in best academic tradition, I made one up and attributed it to myself. So you can ignore the citation there, but an interoperability profile is a structured description of the content, the format, and the method of an information exchange and of the business rules governing that exchange. This is not something that I can make up. The idea that profiles aren't standards, but that they describe the use of standards, very much comes from the integrating the healthcare enterprise. It's very much the mantra of IHE, and which we've built a lot of our work on top of IHE. In fact, we borrow pretty heavily from the IHE framework. I'm not going to say a lot about IHE because the interoperability showcase now has been part of FIN and FIC for the last 3 years, so people have had a chance to see those demonstrations of how systems connect. Typically, they're focused on building interoperability between commercial participants. They cover very comprehensive use cases. They're very rich and expressive sets of messages rolled into transactions, which provide several different ways of approaching the same kind of information exchange. And they're complex. IHE covers a lot of different domains, and we really draw primarily from the lab domain and the IT infrastructure domain in our work. So what we've done is borrowed from that IHE framework pretty heavily. We've borrowed their structure quite a bit, but we have been building facility-level profiles for resource-constrained facilities, which are simpler, which contain fewer actors typically. They contain fewer use cases. They're more highly constrained, so they're a little bit easier to manage. They use simpler transactions. We tend to take out some of the choices that IHE provides, and that we use more highly constrained standards. So the goal is to really make this all, to take these very large implementation guides and shrink them into something much more tractable, and yet still with that structure and regularity. So our focus has been on interoperability at the hospital and clinic level. What we have found is that the profile we developed for EMR lab information system has been reusable for EMR pharmacy in Haiti, and that design pattern gave us a pretty good head start on some issues around identity management and identity verification and including fingerprint authentication. So this is kind of where the rest of the talk is going to go. I've already talked about the first three points on here, and really the other point I wanted to bring up as part of our strategy is to develop a phased approach to implementing profiles. So the IHE profiles typically are sort of describe a complete information interaction, whereas we have gone fairly carefully and deliberately from demographic data exchange to result data exchange, and orders is kind of on the horizon. This is the use case that we work from, pretty standard kind of work case of patients going into visiting a provider determining tests, labs being sent, or an order being sent to the laboratory. Typically, in most of the settings in which we work, that order goes over to the lab with the patient. The blood is still inside the patient. The patient gets their blood drawn at the lab, but the workflow doesn't really vary if it's an externally collected specimen, and then the results are sent back to the clinic. So the key parts in which the key parts to computerize for us have been the point at which information about a specimen, the collection and receipt of a specimen is obtained, the results are produced, and the results are sent back to the clinic and received. Those are the four areas that we concentrated on first. It's not that the ordering isn't important, it's just that the ordering is a little less important, it's a little less in the critical path of operations, and because orders tend to be fairly similar, they tend to be highly stereotyped, paper actually works pretty well for orders in those settings currently. So we've focused on the red boxes. The phased implementation I mentioned, The first approach is order transmission on paper and identification of patient, computerized identification of patient in the EMR to make sure that the lab is actually dealing with the correct patient. That's necessary because when we get to the computerized result transmission part, we need to be absolutely sure that we're talking about the right patient. It's easy to do if you're building one big monolithic system and the labs just get subsumed into it, but in this case, we're really trying to build a carefully structured interaction between two systems. And then the third phase is a completely electronic version, but it's really that second phase that I want to concentrate on. A paper order being transmitted, a demographic query and demographic response between the EMR and the lab system, and then an electronic result being transmitted back from the lab system. The transaction set that we use comes straight out of IHE, and again, it's a very small subset of the of an ITI 21 transaction with two specific messages that we've chosen. It's a very small subset of a Lab 3 transaction on the result side, again, with a subset of the messages, and then the adoption of a good chunk of the E-Link standard to give us some semantic constraints, constraints of meaning, of coding schemes. The reason we are pretty confident that we've got a generalizable design pattern is that we've implemented this in four different settings. One of those is the interaction between OpenELIS and eSante, the EMR in Haiti that Dr. Manuel presented in the last session. Another is we've developed the interaction between OpenELIS and OpenMRS. The third is that we've done an extension to support a facility patient index for common identity management and verification across facility. That's a design area that we're working on right now. And the fourth, I know that I'm not going to have time to get to in this talk, but we've also done a Canada Health Info Away version 3 interaction that uses the same design pattern, the same profile. So I think I'm going to just go directly to eSante and OpenELIS. We've got an EMR that we use in about 70 sites in Haiti. That's the Ministry of Health's EMR. OpenELIS, the lab system, is now implemented in 10 sites. As I mentioned, we also use that for patient part of this profile for the standards underlying pharmacy demographics and patient transfer. And again, we kind of went through the structure of that profile before. We have developed a module for OpenMRS that allows OpenMRS to respond to those demographic queries. OpenMRS is used in the Partners in Health sites in Haiti, and we've had a Google Summer of Code student who's developed something to respond to that patient demographic query profile, essentially, to fit that patient demographic profile query. And that's being tested now. So I wanted to shift a little bit and just kind of talk about the order in which we developed the parts of this profile. Back in 2009, it seemed pretty clear that the lowest hanging fruit was to get exchange of patient lists, to get demographics moving back and forth between the two systems. And at that point, again, the EMR is eSante, LIS is OpenELIS. It turned out that our lowest hanging fruit was also very valuable to the pharmacy folks, which derailed us for a little bit because they'd been asking all along for lists of patients. And as soon as they figured out that we actually had a query that they could use in real time to look at the facility index for a facility, the SCMS folks implemented that query as part of the Haiti version of EDT, of their electronic dispensing tool. So now we have one patient record being used in two different places. We have the EMR being used as a facility, as a patient index by both the LIS and the pharmacy system. We got, and so by the time of the earthquake, which is kind of a one way in which implementation in Haiti is sort of measured, is stuff you did before the earthquake and stuff that you've done since the earthquake. By the time of the earthquake, we had a pilot lab system using demographic exchange with that profile. We had the pharmacy system using the same kind of demographic exchange profile. And then after the earthquake, we spent quite a bit of time with sort of re-implementing EMRs as facilities were reopened, expanding the lab system implementation, And developing the OpenMRS module much more recently. So at this point, we have 10 systems, demographic exchange with the EMR, that optional module to allow OpenMRS to fit in there, and the pharmacy system still functioning. In another month or so, we'll have a few more lab facilities. They tend to pop up at the rate of a couple a month, and we'll have the results, the computerized results portion done. But over the summer, we had another wrinkle thrown into the mix. As everybody, you know, everyone's familiar with the idea of the CDC country office coming along with one more requirement that suddenly becomes urgent. And in this case, it was fingerprint identity management using fingerprints. And so CDC and ministry both very much wanted to see fingerprints tied in with the EMR. So that we built that piece out over this summer, but it really got us thinking about kind of a more general approach to patient identity management. We were originally told fingerprints, maybe other biometrics, maybe iris, a bunch of things, but we started thinking about the functions associated with identity management and the functions associated with management with managing demographics and other kinds of attributes, demographics and other identifiers from other systems, and then the functions associated with identity verification, with making sure that somebody is who you think they are or that you can quickly identify somebody. Clearly the EMR was the driver for doing this, but we decided that we wanted, a pattern to share that information. We wanted to know how that would fit in. And we got interested in this idea of implementing a facility-level patient index for all of those identity transactions. So where that's kind of taken us is to take, we've realized that same patient demographic query profile works fairly nicely, and because the lab and pharmacy system already follow those rules, it's pretty easy to shift them to using a patient index, which can manage fingerprints and other identifiers, and then to shift the EMR to use that same common model. So orders will still flow from the clinician to the ancillary systems. Results will still flow back from the ancillary systems to the EMR, but we'll move towards this common pool of patients that are used throughout the facility. It turns out there's some interesting design patterns in thinking about how a facility-level patient index works as well. So the functions of enrollment, management, and verifying attributes and identifiers. I talked with David Lubinsky at PATH is doing a lot of work with national insurance right now. And the design pattern is really pretty similar in what you do to manage identity in an insurance plan and what you do to verify status in a national insurance plan. Vital registration has a similar design pattern, a similar pattern of managing identity and verifying status. Anyway, just back to where I started, you know, we have those well-defined functions that are usable across multiple systems. They're highly stereotyped transactions with a few changes of message are useful in very different settings like lab and pharmacy. At the facility level, we have a pretty good architecture, and I think that that's the start of a good, broader e-health architecture with well-defined components, well-defined business rules, and standards-based interoperability that implements those business rules. Interoperability is good. Standards aren't sufficient. Profiles are not standards. They describe the use of standards, and describing things is critical. Describing things carefully is critical if you're going to try and build something complex and get others to be able to use it or see what you've done. There are some questions. We can do this with other partners in Haiti. We do this with them the SCMS program and programmers who work for MSH. We're working with PIH now on this common definition of the registration system of the patient index components. But could we do it more broadly than that? Is a good question. Does this really help other developers? We have a pretty specific vision for facility level architecture. I think it's different from Mark's vision in smart care. So that's a good question. Does this help? Does it aid in understanding information exchange? Regardless of those questions, I hope that it tastes good. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions. If people have any questions, let me pass the mic. Any questions for Bill?
Yeah. Hey, Bill. In the last session, we saw that people were extending patients into households. Okay, and you know that I don't have to talk to you about the various things affiliated with patients like contact information, relationships with other people who may or may not be patients. What are the boundaries of the identity service there?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question, because this kind of gets back to the first point about architecture, is that the boundaries of components are absolutely critical, and that's where being able to describe well what each piece does, and not sort of the classic software thing is, if I just build one more module, it'll be that much easier. And so you get these systems which are massively accreted over time with huge chunks of functionality that are, that pass information internally in kind of poorly documented ways and are very difficult to maintain, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it's pretty important to try and separate functions cleanly. And one of the things that that we've kind of wrestled with around the design of the registration system is even simpler than your question, which is simply, should the registration system, should the patient index keep track of encounters, or should it only be used for identity management? And we're not sure what to do about that right yet. The classic MPI in the States keeps track of identity information and encounters. And, just looking at that grossly, there's good reasons for that if you want to use the patient index, if you want to use the patient index as an index into the patient's encounters, if you want to find out where to go to look at other information. In this facility level index model, it's not so important to be able to identify the other systems in which the patient has been seen. So on the other hand, it's nice to be able to get a quick summary from one place of all the patient's encounters. So I was going to say, so we got stuck asking the question whether encounter data belongs there or not. In Haiti, we haven't had to think about the family relationships and household survey yet. But in Kisumu, in Western Kenya, we're working on using the same design pattern for an interface between the Columbia's ICAP EMR and the CDC's demographic surveillance system. And in that case, family relationships are very much a part of the information that we want to transfer. There is no place to store them in the EMR, and we don't have control over the EMR to add a place. But what we're thinking of doing in that case is not making it part of the patient index, but making a small store that will contain CDAs that are essentially just family history, family trees, or family tree patterned after the family history section of the CDA. So I think that information, to me, sorry to give you such a long-winded answer, but that information has the feel to me of something that should be stored separately. It doesn't have the feel to me of something that should be incorporated in the patient index. And I guess, just like encounter information, I can see the argument for storing encounter information in a patient index, but I don't think it applies that well to facility-level indices in Haiti. I can see the argument for storing contact information in a patient index in Kenya, but I think that it's cleaner to put it in its own information store and really use the index for identity management. Would you disagree?
No, I wouldn't disagree. I was just looking around because I had one other sort of architecture related question, which is, are you talking about some sort of a service bus along which all messages flow, or are you still talking point-to-point sort of messaging?
Service bus on which messages flow, I think, is the underlying model. So, I mean, it's implemented like many systems as a hub and spoke with an interface engine. We use MIRTH typically, but so that the underlying block diagram is a Mirth hub and spoke, but it's functionally an enterprise bus.
So you could actually have a common small identity piece, and then on one system you might have your tree piece, and on a OpenMRS related system you might have your address, name, identity number, contact stuff. So the responses from both of those services would come back to whoever requested.
Yeah. Now the trick there is boundaries around the system. I think if OpenMRS really pushed strongly to say that family trees were an important part of the medical record and belonged within the medical record, that would change the architecture, and we probably wouldn't argue that eSante should store them separately. We would probably happily go along with that. But it hasn't, that particular design issue hasn't been as important as definitive identity management in Haiti has been so far.
We might have time for one more question for Bill. Anyone? All right. Well, okay. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Victoria? Sure.